Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening, and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you. I am your groove mistress, your hostess, and your cruise director for the evening, Madame Perry, but you can call me Jan or Jennifer or Perry, Miss Perry. It's all good. Anyway, thank you so much to everybody once again for listening, and maybe it's because people have more time or they're at home, and people are getting more involved and sending more comments and things to me and suggestions, and I like that. Also, in the questions I've gotten recently, I've got to address that first. No, I haven't yet gotten someone to do the drawing for the books from Julie Blomacki and Matt Coyle, but I will. And so I'll have some winners to you by the weekend. Also, two people last week that I had on the show, Wednesday night was Don Most. You know him as Donnie Most or Ralph Mouth from Happy Days First. Yes, I did post the video he did with Robert Wool from the show Viral Vignettes, but I will put it out again. And also the show he did with Anson Williams, his old co-star from Happy Days, that they had never acted again in all these years until recently. And this is an Amazon Prime show. It's called Harvest Time, but the trailer or the pilot they did put on YouTube, and he gave it to me to share, so I shared that. Also, he said he was coming to Atlanta. No, he was in Atlanta to go doing a play, then he was going to come back and sing, but, you know, things changed. So, but as soon as he is, he's going to send me new music and let us know, so he will we'll know when Don Most is going to be singing and swinging in Atlanta and everywhere. Also, Bruce Sudano, singer, songwriter, musician. Most of the songs you know of his are ones he did with his late wife Donna Summer. Wrote for her when they wrote songs together. Bruce Sudano's new CD or EP, Spirals Volume 1, is available, and you can get it from his website. And I'll be sharing the links to all that stuff again on all of my social media. But, yeah, his voice is still in great shape, too. And Bruce is not slowing down, thank goodness. Oh, also recently, a couple months ago, or maybe longer, I had Brad Schreiber on talking about his book, Music is Power. And in the book, Music is Power, he's going through music way back to skiffle and folk music, up through the modern time, songs that comment on current political and social situations, what they used to call protest songs and stuff. And because this week was the 50th anniversary of the shootings at Kent State University, Ohio, and that's something that, of course, figures prominently in his book, Music is Power, Brad Schreiber asked if like to come back on and if he could come back on and talk about that. And I said, yeah, definitely. So he will be thinking about 2 weeks. We haven't set a date yet, so I will let you know all about that. Now, as I've told you, you've seen the post. I've been telling you about this too. I am so excited about tonight's guest. And lucky for me, I've got a lot of guests to be excited about, and definitely this one too. You might have gotten to know him, if you don't know him already. You might have gotten to know him on a show I did recently, about a week ago, called Looking Forward, just thinking about how life is going to be after COVID-19 or going forward with things. And he was one of the guests on there with that excellent panel that included Will Hare, Mary Fan, Thomas Watson, and just had to have him back tonight because there's so much more that people ask me about him, and so much they wanted to know. Ask us. Well, you know, don't ask me. We'll ask him. So I'm delighted to have back here tonight in the Genie Bottle, filmmaker, actor, director, and knows all kind of things that I don't understand. True media personality. Does not describe me. But he is here tonight, and so please welcome back to Madam Perry Salon, Eric Shoemaker. Eric, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me again.
I am thrilled to have you back so soon. Your seat's still warm for you, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a nice memory foam one from last time.
Yeah. So after the last show, we had Mary Fan Thomas Watson, Will Herr, who, you know, all Will has to do is say, "I've got an idea," and I do it. He's such an interesting fellow. And
he's
Thomas
a smart guy.
And Mary are fantastic, too. Yeah, very smart guy. You guys didn't all go out and have fun without me after the show, did you? Because, you know, we were all on lockdown.
Well, we did, but it was virtual fun.
Okay. And I was probably walking the dogs or something. So we all had had some fun. Listen, again, thank you for coming back and talking. You've got so much work, such a great body of work in your career that I'm so excited to share with people. Now, of course, I always put out that you're an actor, director, filmmaker, and everything. And I don't know how you've done all this work. It's because I don't know how old you are. It's none of my business, but you look like a very young man. So to get all of this done, you must have some superhuman strength or some vitamins that I don't even know about yet. But I know you are definitely a critically acclaimed, multiple award-winning actor, producer, director, filmmaker. You've got quite a list of successful film, TV, multimedia projects on your CV. And you obviously knew this is what you wanted to do from an early age. Were you raised around theater or film or?
Yeah, both. My parents are both actors, and so when I was 6 years old, at least my earliest memory of it is when I was 6 years old, when as my dad would tell me in particular stories about what he did, I wanted to know more. And so when we were living in Los Angeles, as he was pursuing during that period where he was pursuing his acting career, we could be found every weekend in Roxbury Park in L.A. with plastic swords, plastic rapiers, while he was teaching me to stage fence, and we were reciting scenes from Hamlet. And that was kind of the beginning, at least the beginning that I remember. My dad tells me earlier stories. He said when I was somewhere around three, he told me a story that I didn't remember at all. He was doing an audition at a theater in L.A., and for a Hamlet play, in fact, and he was reciting, he had the skull in his hand, he was reciting, Alas, poor Yorick, I miss him, Horatio, and I was there in the theater because he didn't have anything else to do with me, and my mom and I were all there, and he something caught his eye, and he looked over, and I was gone. I wasn't there in the seats. So he panicked for a second, and then he realized I was standing in front of him on the stage staring at him. And so he put the skull down and put my head in his hands and finished the monologue. And so that was kind of when he first knew I had the bug, and I just begged them to continue teaching me from the point that I became cognizant of what it was. So so it's always been a thing for me.
Wow, that's a pretty magnificent story there. So right away you knew. Now both your parents were involved in theater and acting, weren't they? Both stage and screen.
They met on stage, in fact. They both done theater and film. And my mom has specialized particularly in dialect coaching as well. So that's been extremely beneficial to me. They're kind of my secret weapons when I have a really extremely challenging role. And most of my roles are extremely challenging. I really tend to like character roles that I have to kind of, you know, just work extremely hard to become someone else. So My mom has taught me all kinds of different accents. My dad, coaches me when I need it. So they've both been really, really helpful and taught me quite a lot, among the many other people who've taught me as well. But so yeah, they're both involved, and I've even managed to work with them on something here and there.
Oh, that's nice. So your mom must be obviously highly skilled dialect coach. So has she taught you Southern dialects, and do they sound like mine?
She has, very specific ones, and in fact, most particularly, I haven't done a lot of Southern roles. When I played Doc Holliday in the recently released film Tombstone Rashomon by Alex Cox, she taught me very carefully an Atlanta, Georgia accent that would have been accurate for the 1880s, and I had about 30 days to work that and get it as close to perfect as I could, and fully expecting that if I made the slightest slip up, that would be the first thing I hear about from her, which I appreciate.
Yeah. So good to have somebody that you can trust to give you the legit stuff, and also to be right there to correct it right away, let you know. Yeah, I think I was telling someone one day, they came on and they said, "Oh, I've learned to do a Southern accent." And when the girl was doing it was a woman from England, but her voice, it was more of a Scarlett O'Hara kind of thing that she was doing.
Uh-huh.
And and I said, "Look, you know what? Years ago, I remember seeing, I do not remember who played him, but I know it could have been 5-10 years ago, a TV film about the murder of John Lennon."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, whoever played Mark David Chapman, I want to think it was Judah Friedlander, but I don't really know, really don't remember for sure. I said, you know what? I did not know Mark David Chapman. I mean, I did probably, but I don't remember anything about him because we grew up in the same neighborhood. And he was one of my younger brothers, and they were in Boy Scouts together, Gals and Boy Scouts, and my mother, father knew the family. But I do know enough about it to know this. If in Gresham Park, I know that nobody there, of course we all had Southern accents, whereas this actor did something more like a riverboat gambler thing, which, believe me, if young Mark David Chapman had spoken like that in Gresham Park in Southeast Atlanta in the 60s, he wouldn't have lived long enough. He wouldn't have lived long enough to kill anybody. What do you think? He just wouldn't have lasted that long. So, yeah.
Accents are a funny thing in film. They really, they often are all over the map, and oftentimes also when you get a movie role, you don't have a ton of time before you perform, so I'm sure that's part of it. I've seen some pretty wild accents that were attempts at other accents in a lot of films, and I just can't get away. I can't get away with it.
And of course, we're all over. I mean, I've got cousins that grew up 30 miles away from me, and we couldn't understand each other. So yeah,
yeah.
And to them, I was the cousin in Atlanta that talked funny. So yeah, I got that. We're crazy down here. Anyway, you grow up, your parents are stage and screen actors, your mom's an actor and a coach. You've got the genetics, you've got the legitimacy of it. You're going to be raised, as we would say, you're going to be raised right. And when did you start actually acting? I mean, did you start in school, high school?
Well, I started auditioning and doing little bits of work. I think I was probably around 7 or 8 years old. Had my first agent at, I think, 7 or so. But it was kind of a slow start where I worked into it. I was always doing a little something. There were even points I got some advice from one of my mentors that I had to really chew on. His name was Paul Mantee, and he was an actor who it was actually my dad's best friend, and they both came from non-acting families and both became actors, interestingly enough. And Paul was best known for he was a regular on the TV show Cagney and Lacey. He was, if anyone remembers, the cult classic 1960s film Robinson Crusoe on Mars, which, by the way, had a cameo by Adam West. Paul was Colonel Draper, who was the lead character in that really wonderful film. Paul said something to me that made me really consider things. He said, you know, he would often, my dad was the one who gave me a lot of technique. Paul taught me a lot about the industry. And he said to me, you know, Eric, if you can possibly think of anything else you could do with your life that would make you feel fulfilled, please go do that. Because if you're going to be an actor, this is an incredibly difficult career that will take a great deal out of you. You'll have to make a lot of sacrifices. It'll be hard. So think about it before you really fully commit. And so I did a gig and then wasn't sure. I spent a while through acting, I discovered Kung Fu. I met the man who would become a Kung Fu master, and I studied Kung Fu for quite some time. And there was a point where I thought, well, maybe, you know, I was still doing acting gigs little by little, but maybe not going full bore. And I thought, maybe this is my path. Maybe really, you know, acting led me to Kung Fu, and this is really what I'm supposed to do, is teach this. And then I get these moments every once in a while where, for lack of better words, God kind of kicks me in the head and says, you know, hey. and I got one of those moments. And in fact, had a really good talk with my Kung Fu master. I was, you know, where he basically said, look, you know, you can't give full commitment to everything, so you've got to really, you know, choose your path. And so I, at that point, decided that I had to really refocus, and I put everything into my acting and filmmaking career. So I'd always been in it, you know, and I'd been around it, and I'd been around people who were in it. But I'd say it's only in the past, 15 years or so that I've given it full focus and taken no prisoners.
Mm. And that's the thing, you know, having your parents as well as Paul Mantee to coach you. Yeah, and they knew what they were talking about. And, of course, Mantee, you know, he was working, I think, up until almost 2000, as far as I know, mm-hmm. and doing lots of TV, everything from Cagney and Lacey, as you mentioned, Murder, She Wrote, episode of Seinfeld.
Huge resume. Really did a lot of stuff. Brilliant guy. Most of my technique knowledge came from people who I was studying formally with in other acting classes, and my parents, who actually gave me formal acting classes. And Paul was really, you know, he was the guy who gave me reality checks and taught me a lot about how to navigate the industry more often. Although I think it was funny. I used to, he would get on my dad and he would be on the phone and they would argue over acting technique, which was pretty hysterical because they're both brilliant. But they had very different ways of approach. And so, they were both very diplomatic when they talked to me about each other's views on technique. they got very technical and, you know, they were always saying, well, you know, they'd be kind of mad at each other, but then they'd, you know, privately each talk to me and say, well, we just have differing opinions on certain things, but it's not that one or the other is wrong. So, yeah.
Oh, that's very diplomatic indeed. Yes. Hey, let me ask you this. Have you ever, that sounds like a great story that a lot of people would like to hear. Well, not a story, but, you know, actual things. I hope that at some time that you have or will write these things down. I can see this as a great two-man play.
Well, maybe. I guess there's a piece of film or stage work in almost everything, I guess.
Yeah, because the way you saw it, I could just see the two talking, and then they both got, they'll argue about it, and then be diplomatic as they explain it. But, that's his opinion, okay? So, yeah, that sounds that's very interesting, and sounds very entertaining as well. Okay, so then let's talk about, so you're already getting help with these guys. You're doing, trying to see where I want to go through this with you. Let's go on up to Legends and Lies, the Real West that you did for Fox TV, where you played Wyatt Earp.
Mm-hmm.
How much fun was that?
That was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I mean, who isn't going to enjoy playing a legendary character and shooting scenes at a legendary place where a lot of Westerners have been shot, surrounded by big cameras and big crews and stuff. It was a blast. It was a bit of a challenging time. I got the role about a week before filming, and leaving the audition, I injured myself. It wasn't anybody's fault. It's kind of a funny story. I was driving away from the audition, which was at Old Tucson, formerly known as Old Tucson Studios, again a legendary place where a lot of big movies have been filmed, and felt very good about the audition, and was kind of in Wyatt Earp mindset. And as I was driving away, there's these really curvy roads leading away from Old Tucson, and I saw this gigantic fairly large rock in the middle of the road that was pointy, and it looked kind of like a caltrop from medieval times, and it occurred to me that that could damage somebody's tire. And there's a lot of mountains around there, and it just, I guess, fell off a mountain there. It was sitting in the middle of the road. So I decided that I was going to, I said to myself, well, what would Wyatt Earp do? Well, I guess he'd save the day. So I decided I needed to get the rock out of the road. So I drove back around and found a way to get back up the mountain, and I timed it perfectly so that I would leap out. I would, put the brakes on my car, leap out of the car. It's a very tight two-way street. If you make a slight turn to the right, you can drive into a mountain. If you make a slight turn to the left, you hit a metal rail and go flying off the mountain. So there's not a lot of room. And and if the car's coming up behind you fast and they can't see you, you have a problem. So I timed it so that there would hopefully be enough space between me and the cars coming. And the plan was that I leap out of the car, undo the seatbelt, leap out of the car, run over to the rock, toss it back onto the side of the road, get back in the car and go. So that was the plan. I had just enough time to do it. So I stopped the car, hit the brakes, hit the seatbelt, leapt out of the car, and my seatbelt caught on my cell phone case, which was on my belt, and then proceeded, just as my leg was taut, the metal part of my seatbelt whipped around and smacked me in the back of my tight muscle, and I went down. So I couldn't stand on the leg. So, being the kind of nut that I am, I then hopped over to the rock, threw it off the road, hopped back to the car, got in the car, hit the gas with my leg that wasn't working very well, and about 3 seconds later, pain! proceeded to get lost on the way home and drive 40 minutes to an urgent care. So I spent the next week trying to learn lines, learn as much as I could about Wyatt, and get to the point where I could walk properly and ride a horse. a little bit of a challenge. But the actual time on set was wonderful, and a lot of good people out there. Since I had no time, of course, and I had not done a Western before, I also unfortunately had to learn to ride a horse 15 minutes before riding a horse for 6 hours carrying a revolver in one hand. The cameras were rolling and playing someone who's an expert with horses. So that was fortunately, I had a wonderful crew of horse trainers out there, and Elvis the horse, who is a movie trained horse and truly saved my life and saved the scenes, because he kind of figured out what I was trying to tell him to do, And occasionally he'd look back at me and go, dude, seriously, oh, God. But he was very tolerant. And...
Oh, man, what an adventure. You know, you're telling the story about you leaving the audition and going to get the rock, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, so it's like he's gone from getting audition here to an audition for something like in the future, Fast and Furious. And then as soon as he mentioned the cell phone case catches on, I'm thinking, oh, my God, now it's like Rebel Without a Cause, you know, in the chicken or the drag race thing.
The things you don't see on screen, the challenges of actually doing the job.
Yeah.
when you're an occasional klutz, it's that was one of my more impressive klutzy moments.
I don't know. I guess the fact, though, that you were, you say klutz, but I think the fact that you were a kung fu master probably, I don't know, but I would say probably helped you get out of it with no more than pain than you did have. You know, at least you had that.
I wouldn't say master, but I wouldn't say master, but I've studied long enough that I have a few skills. And yeah, I mean, to put it this way, had I not had the wonderful training that I did, it might have been a little hard to do the whole hopping on one leg, throwing rock thing, getting back to car quickly, taking off while in pain thing. So fortunately I was quite familiar with doing very uncomfortable exercises for long periods of time and had pretty good balance and so on. And also fortunately, because of Kung Fu training, I can learn most physical skills very quickly, which is why I could learn to ride a horse that fast. So, or sort of ride a horse that fast.
All right. So you didn't have to go limping through Old Tucson, which I love. You know, I told you I've been there for the last 3 years in March for Wild Wild West Con, and I hate to see you limping through there. I've got Mr. Dillon. So, so wow, that's great. So but you're one of the few people. In fact, I think if there's anyone else that's done it, there may be, but I don't know them. That you played both Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. And that was in film Tombstone, help me pronounce this, Rashomon by none other than Alex Cox for director. Alex Cox.
Yeah. Incredible director.
Who did Repo Man.
Guy. Yes, and Sid and Nancy and Walker and so many other, you know, kind of cult classic, brilliant, original, moving films. I'm a fan, obviously. And, so that was quite a thing.
We all are. So do you feel like, I mean, it had to be a quite awe-inspiring experience to be in this film, directed by Alex Cox. Do you feel like, I'm sure, you know, you developed your own style and professionalism, but the training that you had as a child, having parents and having friends of your parents who were legitimate, disciplined actors, I'm sure that really went far working with a legend like him.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, you know, this Doc Holliday was a very... It was a challenging role because he was a very complex person and very different from who I am. And I would say that, you know, my interpretation of Wyatt was a little closer to the persona that I used to take on when I was teaching Kung Fu. But Doc, you know, was such a complex person who was in a lot of pain. He was extremely intelligent. He had, he was a doctor. He was a gambler. He was on drugs. He was he had this really strange and messed up relationship with Kate Haroney, otherwise known as Big Nose Kate. He had this odd friendship with Wyatt and Alex had written this amazing and wild and wonderful script where he gave this story the Rashomon treatment, which is based on Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon, a film essentially where several different people tell the same story about something that happened from their perspective and from what they want other people to believe. So they tell different stories about the same event. And it was really a brilliant way of approaching this because, if you know about the what's known as the gunfight at the OK Corral, which did not take place at the OK Corral exactly, as Doc points out in the film, it was reported on based on the eyewitnesses' accounts of many different people, all of whom had a different agenda or different memories of what happened. So no one's really clear on exactly what went down and why. And so he took the approach of, well, let's tell that story from multiple perspectives and see what we get, which was really interesting to play.
I would imagine that would be a very satisfying role.
It sure was. It was particularly satisfying because what I most enjoy doing is disappearing. I most enjoy completely becoming someone else. It's hard when it's someone that's that different from me. And so when I accomplish it to the point where hopefully, and some people have told me this about various pieces of my work, including this one, that they almost forgot that I was the one on the screen, then that's extremely satisfying for me. Both spiritually and emotionally and as a professional, I really love to not be seen on the screen, but I want you to just see the character. And with a character like that, I had 30 days to lose a ton of weight because Doc was, dying of tuberculosis. So I physically transformed. I walked different. I learned the accent. I learned his history. I tried to think like him to the point where if you talk to me on the set, or any time just before I came onto the set or for about 30 minutes after every day, you were not talking to me, you were talking to Doc. And one of my pals on the set, Mike Ray, said something that really was a high compliment to me at the last day of shooting when we did a little after party afterwards and I came out of Doc, which took me a while to get out of the persona. And he said, "Wow, it's really nice to finally meet you." Which is a very high compliment.
Wow. All right. I love that. That
was
great.
It's quite a thing, but it's quite a painful process to play him, and that makes it all the more fulfilling because I knew that I really worked for it.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed you did. All right. Well, you know what? I've got to be talking about some more of your things. I've even got an audio clip from the film you did. Right now, I need to take a short break and talk about my new sponsor for this week and next week. So, Eric, I'm going to let you have a little time to get a glass of water or something, or some coffee, or whatever time it is. It might be margarita time there. I don't know. So I'm going to give you just a moment, and then we'll be right back with more of Eric Schumacher. All right. Hey, this is a time when it's really hard to get out and get the things you need. I mean, sure, you can put on a mask and glasses and gloves, or you can order some things, you can pick up curbside, but sometimes there's things you need that just aren't in your corner store. That is where BioMarth comes in. BioMarth is spelled BioMarth, and it's BioMarth.com. You go online, you look there. BioMarth wants to be your number one source for all things health. They are dedicated to giving you the very best of weight loss products, pain relief, anti-aging, digestive health, as well as a lot of vegan health and wellness products that you may not even be aware of yet or didn't think that you could find. For example, let me take you through there and show you some of the products that they have. I'm looking on the website. If you follow with me, biomarth.com. And by the way, they're based in the UK, but they do ship internationally. And they are vegan. Everything there is animal-free, and all payments, all transactions are secure. Some of the things that they have featured right now, digestive aid, digestive enzymes, alkaline infusion powder, magnesium oil spray, rustic. They have a rustic soap selection. organic neem oil. They have a lot of hair care and body products as well, plus different shakes for health or for muscle growth, whatever you want. They have everything from chocolate-flavored shakes, powder, L-glutamine amino acid powder, and this one I love, iHeart Pumpkin and Chia Seed Super Protein Powder, a Hemp Nourish Protein Powder, lots of delicious stuff for you. Also, so whatever you're looking for in supplements, things for immunity support, fibromyalgia, weight loss, cellulite, anti-aging, women's health, blood pressure, respiratory health, that's on everybody's mind right now, fatigue and low energy, whatever it is that you need a little extra help with right now, go to BioMart, and that's BioMart.com, BioMart, and check them out. They want to take care of you. They want to deliver things to you. Okay, so this is Madam Perry. I'm still here with actor, filmmaker, producer, director. The man does everything. in fact, right now, I think if you heard him with me on the show last week, the Looking Forward After COVID-19 show, I think we established that, you know, probably for, he hasn't said this, okay, this is all coming from me, but maybe for the right price, you could probably hire him as an assistant or bodyguard to go grocery shopping. He can give a glare to get people 6 feet away from you or use those kung fu skills. I don't know, Eric. I'm just saying.
Probably not going to do that, although
maybe
I think
not.
You're referring
okay.
to
All
what
right.
we
well,
talked about last week is the special glare thing. Yeah.
The special glare. Yes, tell me. You've got a special – your glare is known in show business and probably beyond.
A little bit. I guess my kung fu students used to after I started teaching tell me that I had just this special glare, and I guess that's bled into my acting work. So when I play very intense characters, I seem to have a special glare that I've been told freezes the blood in one's system. but it's all about being in character. So.
Okay.
But it definitely helps when I have to go out shopping and I need to clear a pathway. I just sort of, you know, get into character and put the glare on and people get out of my way.
All right. I think you go.
Or call the police. I'm not, you know, it depends on the situation. that man's making me uncomfortable.
No. Now I got to get some water. Okay. Yeah, because we also had Mary Fan on, and she's going to be back. She's going to be here Monday night. Yeah, the thing with her is that she's going to be having trapeze artistry or aerial art skills. You know, we were saying who would be the most valuable. It's like we've got some kind of an island survival competition going. Who do you want on your team? I know I definitely want you and Mary both if I had to be on some kind of survivor team, which I hope I don't, but who knows what could happen. So,
well, as long as you don't ask me to cook, because I mean, if you ever see me cooking in a movie, that was a stunt double.
a stunt double?
Yeah, no, I have a special
right,
lack of skill in the kitchen. It's quite impressive.
Yeah? Okay. All right. Is that something you want to share, or you want to just keep on going?
Oh, no. Keep on going. There's not much to say there other than I am blessed by I'm actually married to a professionally trained chef, so that's why I don't, you know, starve.
That sounds like a lovely relationship. All right, so let's talk. I want to get more into what you're doing now and some other things coming up. There is a TV series, and now people keep, you know, everybody's talking, and I see this just today on Facebook was sharing shows that they've watched. Like, I'm watching this and this and this. I'm going through this series. What have you got, you know, or what have you got? And so people are just kind of getting bored. So I am here to tell you folks that I got a whole – well, I've got a treasure of stuff for you right here from Eric. One thing is a series, and I want to start this one soon. I want you to tell us about a sitcom. It was a sitcom called Cooling Up. I just love the premise of it. So, and you've got you describe it.
Well, actually, that series came out quite some time ago, and it's rather hard to find at this point. It was a wonderful, groundbreaking, very early streaming web series. It was very funny, created by Melissa Bonsack, who I'm probably mispronouncing the name of. I'm good at that. But she's a fantastic writer, director, who came up with this concept about a TV news producer who gets into a situation where she ends up kind of losing her mind, and then after she gets back in shape, she is given a community service, and she's forced to do community service at a public access station. So she's working in this crazy kind of, you know, public access environment. She's a pro news person, and all the kooky characters that exist mm-hmm. there. And I was fortunate to be cast as the guy who led her to lose her mind, a character called Frank Mann, who was kind of a pompous ass and not a very bright guy, and he was the newscaster who she was supposed to marry. And it was a very fun show, and it lasted for only one season, but it was pretty groundbreaking because it was very, you know, it was early in the web series world, and it was extraordinarily funny.
Hey, I worked public access. You know, I had other people's shows and my own. So I know that's a funny world as it is, you know, without something like that. So about being condemned to it or punished or being sentenced to it. All right, well, then let's get – yeah, so we'll have to just dig that up. People are going to have to start digging out some things for consumers, okay? We need more stuff. Well, then let's move up a little bit. There's a series, and help me pronounce the name – got a lot of acclaim, sci-fi web series Zahn, The Alien Interviews.
Yeah, and
you co-produced
technically
that, am I right?
Pronounced John. I did, in fact. Yeah, that
John,
was
okay.
That was something I co-produced that with my good friend and colleague Robert Linden, and had a couple of terrific directors, Alan Williams and Terrell Good, who were kind of the lead creatives on the set, and the series was written by my frequent filmmaking partners, Marty Cotola and Cliff Campbell. Really great project. Short story of a young-looking man claiming to be an ancient extraterrestrial walks into a secret agency of the United States government and claims to be an ancient extraterrestrial and demands to be interrogated. And then he starts telling stories about what he claims are his experiences throughout world history. And it was just a very cute show that we worked very hard on. It's 4 hours long, 20 episodes, and it played at Comic Cons and film festivals and is available online at YouTube on YouTube right now. Got a lot of acclaim, and people seem to like it.
All right. Well, then, let's see, there's something else I want to, because I've got a few more things I want to get through while I've still got a little time with you left. I should have planned a part two for you. Maybe we will if you've got time. But right now, I've got a clip. I've got an audio clip from The Revenge of Zoe. Could you set that up for us and tell us what it's about?
Yeah, sure. So Revenge of Zoe is a very clever indie-produced film series by Pondo Enterprises. It's a fan culture, or if you could say geek culture, comedy set largely in comic book stores and game stores. Has all kinds of cameos from people who are well-known creators within the industry, such as in that particular film too. The better-known ones were Timothy Zahn, who many people know as, you know, having written a lot of very well-known novels, and Lucas Turnbloom, who is best known for the Dream Jumper comic book series, and so that was it's a comedy film really about people who are, you know, very wonderful, unusual, nerdy people trying to be friends and write movies. And so this clip is from the film that's actually titled Revenge of Zoe. And it's The setup for this scene is the character I play, John Burns, who's one of the comic book store owners, is has an evening in with his fiance. That's pretty much it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go then.
You're not listening to me.
Of course I am. I swear.
Oh, yeah? Well, then what did I say then, huh? Huh?
You worked, and it was a full moon. Bitch, Janine sucks.
I love you.
I love you, too.
Mom called me at work today.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's not that bad. Dad doesn't hate you.
I mean, of course he hates me. I'm sleeping with his daughter. Plus, I'm a nerd boy who sells comic books. I know every time he looks at me, he thinks, this guy's supposed to take care of my daughter? What kind of future can he provide her? Not to mention my grandkids. Every time he looks at me, I swear.
You're a successful businessman. What more do you want?
Yeah, you're right.
I always am. Now, turn off that light and snuggle up next to me.
What about your avocado mask?
Ooh, grab a chip and shut up.
Oh, wait.
Hey, where are you going?
Hang on, I got a surprise.
John! This better be good.
Huh? Surprise?
Is that the squirrel outfit?
You better believe it. Want to try it on?
Maybe just without the headpiece.
Let's store some nuts for winter. So that's a wonderful Sarah Jackson, very great actress. And so they have a very, you know, John comes across in the film as a very kind of conservative character, and then but they have a very weird love life behind the scenes. And I should add that that film was also produced by the guys who wrote John the Alien Interviews, which are the team behind Pondo Enterprises, created these films. It was co-produced with the amazing Jeffrey Notkin, who's well known as for Meteorite Men and a lot of science TV work, and was shot wonderfully by ArcLight Pictures. So great team behind that, and there's another film that was in production and on hold due to the pandemic, and Revenge of Zoe should be released very soon, actually, after winning some awards.
Sweet. All right. We'll be looking forward to that. Well, I've got a few more minutes with you. I've got a lot to cover, so I'm going to break it up and let you just sort of take the lead on this. I'll just give you some.
Sure.
One of the things is, and by the way, Eric is a very sought-after experienced lecturer and speaker, so if you want to get in touch with him to speak, maybe, I don't know, film class, I guess you're doing a lot of online speaking. You've been on a lot of local and national talk shows. You've been quoted in prestigious publications about film and multimedia industries. You speak at Comic-Con, so film festivals, sci-fi festivals, other kind of fan events. If you want to, if people want to contact you and get you to come out and speak to their group, well, actually, you can do some online, can't you? I mean, I was asked to speak to a group of students at Clark Atlanta University a couple of weeks ago, which I did on Zoom. And I get, you know, you can still do that now. But if people want to reach you, to talk to you, or have you come talk to them, where would they go?
Probably the best way is to send an email to my company main email address, which is info@SeeleyStudios.com. That's SEELIE and the word studios, plural, .com. That's the email address for my production company. That's probably the best way. I am all over social media. I get a lot of messages, so I am often slow to respond on things. So that the email address is probably the best way. Someone will see it, and eventually it'll get to me. I should add, I have done some speaking recently, as you did online. In fact, I gave a free acting class, or actually about the business of acting class, about 2 weeks ago now, for an online fan convention called Articon that was put on by a a wig company, Art of Wigs, that does wigs for cosplayers. And that was a lot of fun. And I'm super busy, but I do love to, you know, to kind of give back that way wherever I possibly can.
Yeah, I've noticed that somewhere, I noticed that you are on the Seelie's website. By the way, yes, that is SeelieStudios. And if you're driving, like some people tell me they're driving when they're listening, I will be sharing the link to Seelie's Studios on all of my social media, so you don't have to worry about pulling over and writing it down or anything. I will make sure that it's on all of my social media everywhere if you can get it safely. But you, Studios, I noticed that you did, well, for one thing, you did a book trailer for a mutual friend, David Lee Summers, for his book, The Astronomer's Crypt. That's great. You do some videos, music videos, as well as trailers for authors?
Yeah, we're, you know, we are, we're mainly moving in the direction of doing narrative fiction and working on, you know, we're getting a lot of projects finished and out that are, that are narrative fiction projects, and that's where our company's been moving, more away from client work, but we're still very interested in working with other creatives to make their dreams reality. And so we've done award-winning music videos, and we're doing projects for authors. And so, you know, when it's the right project, we're very interested in talking to other creatives about things that will enhance their work and help them get their work out there, such as things like book trailers and audiobooks and music videos and other similar types of things, which are so that's definitely a passion. I accidentally managed a band for 3 years, in fact, so I know a little bit about that world. And we have a long history of other kinds of client projects through the company. So
it's dangerous, you know. Like I said, as an entertainment publisher, I try to warn people. Say, look, anything to do with show business, music, whatever, it's called a user friendly business. There's always going to be somebody friendly who's wanting to use you. So you got to be careful.
True.
Couple of things I'll think. Also, yeah, well, I've got a couple of minutes left. If you did want to talk to Eric Schumacher, the number 646-716-9922, and I've got a caller on hold right now for you. But before before we get this caller, I want to say, first of all, you mentioned give back a little earlier about what, you know, giving classes and some help to people, but I also know that you're a member of the board for the Forgotten Children, which is ForgottenChildren.org,
mm-hmm.
a nonprofit organization that has almost completed a boarding school for some 100,000 homeless children in Senegal, Africa.
Well, the beginning of this school was not going to house all of the homeless kids in Senegal, but the goal is, you know, to change the game. This was El Nadoye, who's the president of the board, and this is really his baby, and he's a good friend, and he has this plan to not just, you know, take these homeless kids and just give them food or just give them, you know, some, or even just give them an education, or, you know, many of these kids have never had shoes before, things like that. But to actually give them a home where they can be taught everything that they need to learn and be given the support to become to go into careers. And this isn't a part of the world where if you're homeless, there's no resources for you at all. There's a lot of homeless kids there, and so this is really an amazing thing. And over years, there's been little bits of money raised and little bits of money raised to build this school. And it's, you know, of course the pandemic has made it very difficult to move forward. The kids who are currently in the smaller facility that has been built are safe right now, thank God. You know, as we're able to get back to fundraising and to building, or, you know, the board is really looking forward to finishing the project and growing it and really giving these kids a new life.
Okay, I may look that up and share something about that too. For what anybody can help, I had a tutor from Senegal. My husband used to work there a lot on business trips with satellite communications, but I had a tutor from Senegal. That man taught, he tutored me in classes from communication law to computer science, everything. He was brilliant. But anyway, let's bring it here. Welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. Come on in and introduce yourself and say hello to Eric. I think this is from the West Coast.
West Coast?
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey there.
This is Jim Musgrave.
Jim, I thought that looked like you.
Yes,
how are you doing?
Hi, Madam Perry. How are
well,
you?
Come on in and talk. Hello. Talk to Eric
I wanted
Schumacher.
To congratulate
mind,
Mr. Schumacher on his charity work. That's awesome. I was a professor at Caltech, so I know something about enhanced books, you know, EPUB 3 formatting. So I'm teaching an online class now to a lot of, you know, students from Nigeria, you know, a lot of the impoverished nations, but they have technical inclinations. So I'm teaching them how to, you know, publish with my enhanced platform that took me 10 years to develop, actually, with security in mind.
That's great.
Because publishers are getting ripped off. I don't know if you're into the electronic publishing gig at all, but $3 billion loss to, you know, Amazon, because they haven't changed their MOBI format in decades. Anyway, so... But I was really curious about your role as Wyatt Earp, because my latest enhanced book, The Sixth Mystery in the Portia of the Pacific series, has you accused of first-degree murder in 1888 San Diego, in case you wanted to know.
I'll have to talk with Wyatt about that. She's in my
yeah,
he's in my
yeah.
head somewhere.
Right. I was wondering about playing roles like that. Do you do keep it with you for a while, correct? I mean, you
yeah.
get into the part.
Yeah, for me. I mean, for me, everybody's process is very different. And for me, when I build characters from the ground up, so they kind of become, in a weird way, someone who hangs out somewhere in the back of my head and can be recalled when I need them. I kind of feel like Wyatt and Doc, along with many other characters I've played, are kind of hang out with me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. It's almost like a split personality deal. You know, we have many.
In a way.
The psychiatrist used to. The Sybil phenomenon, I guess.
I guess.
Where she had all those.
Yeah, it does sound like
personality.
It's controlled though. It's you know, for me, it's controlled,
yeah.
And that's
oh,
all
yeah.
part of the training. I mean, you know, is the ability to, you know, you build these personas and you kind of try to live them as somewhat real, but you always maintain that part of you that's you, even when you're in the middle of playing the scene, so that you want your reactions
yes.
to be natural on screen. You want people to believe that you're that person, but you also don't want to disappear completely. And you know, but it's interesting. I have found that you know, I can, when I get into that another persona, there are certain skills I gain more quickly and more easily. There are certain things I can do better than I can when I'm me. And you know, there's perhaps it's accessing something that we don't normally allow ourselves to access. You know.
Yes. Well, we're all actors in some form or another.
In some way.
I think
yeah.
we have our personas. But I was wondering about because I do a lot of research for my novels. They're historical in nature. And you have to do that as well, I would imagine.
Yes, as much as possible. And you have to do that. And it comes from a different perspective, you know, because you have to do it so that you can make choices based on what others have said about that person. You have to make choices about what you're going to internalize, what parts of you know, particularly with characters like Wyatt and Doc, who so many people have said so many different things about, and they've said some things about themselves that were recorded as well. You're not, you know, no one's 100% sure what's true, so you have to kind of feel out what feels right, so that when you're responding to something in a scene, you're responding from the standpoint of, you know, this is the person that I am because of what happened to me in the past. And so you're looking at it from the perspective of, you know, what can I find out about this person that helps me to understand who I think they might be, so that I can then internalize that into even my physical movements, the way that I grab a plate, you know. It's all, at least that's my process. I go into that much detail when I have time to. And then from there, I'm I can react in the moment. So it's one thing if you're writing about somebody in an impersonal way, and another thing when you're trying to be that person.
Indeed. When I was doing research into Wyatt and especially his relationship with his common law wife, Sarah Marcus, Josephine, he called her Sadie. She always claimed that he was pretty much an upstanding, clean guy, you know, that really didn't imbibe, you know, alcohol much. But I saw conflicting evidence, you know, that he actually did tie it on, and she really didn't want that covered, you know, in the press too much.
Yeah.
Was he a drinker or not, do you think?
That's a darn good question. My guess is that he really wasn't. And, you know, when you think about the way that he handled a gunfight, he was kind of an innovator. Modern police use techniques that he was, you know, that were very rare in his time. And it's very famously known, for example, that at the actual so it's very famously known that during the what's known as quotes the gunfight at the OK Corral, he was the last person standing. He was completely untouched, and he basically stood in one place, picked his target, fired. And you got to have nerves of steel to do that, and you've also got to have a clear head, I think. You know, I think that because so I doubt very much that he was if he drank at all, I think it was very light. He just didn't feel, he felt to me like someone who wanted to be clear-headed at all times and be able to react, you know, perfectly in all circumstances, and was very thoughtful about the way he approached things and didn't like being out of control.
Well, he was I know the research I did for 1888 San Diego, when he lived down here with his wife, and he bought up like four saloons, you know, gambling he had going, and the 100-round fight, which I begin my mystery with that setting across the border in Tijuana. And he was quite a promoter as well. You know, he was
true.
Quite a guy.
He was a very interesting person, and also someone who consulted for years on early Hollywood movies, kind of shaped in a lot of ways what we see as the modern Western. It was largely what kind of he told Hollywood they should create.
And Jim, to illustrate what you were talking about earlier and asking was about becoming a character, if you weren't, go back and listen to the beginning where he talks about, where Eric talks about and then a situation that occurred on the way out. What would Wyatt Earp do? And it's a good story. So yeah, definitely. It's in the beginning of the show. Definitely go back and check that out.
Okay, I'll listen to that. Yeah.
Oh, it's good.
Thank you very much.
It's good.
Hey,
thank you, Jim, for calling. We appreciate that.
Yeah.
And
I'd like to maybe write to you about some things later. I do like trailers, you know, for my multimedia books, and this one's in development, so, you know.
Okay. I'll be sharing the Sealy Studios address, so you can get that.
Cool.
That will be good. Hey, coming up soon, I don't have any more time, but coming up soon, we didn't even get to talk about the gamer stuff or anything, but you've got some things coming up.
Would it be possible for me to just very quickly plug two super quick things? Okay, I just want to mention a couple of things real quick. So one is the upcoming series Horse Camp, which is a super funny streaming series that is also in production and on hold due to the pandemic, but will release soon after. And there's some trailers out. Very, very funny series by Patrick Ball Media that I was really, really pleased to be involved in. And also upcoming soon, we hope, is the short, the many times award-winning short Bequest, which we're looking forward to getting out there, and that was I got to play a really interesting role in that series as well. So there's that.
Okay, and for my game, for people who listen, that game players and all.
And I should say that was Richard Pines who directed that film. Wonderful actor.
Oh, okay, great. So, yes, when it gets closer, when we're able to see Horse Camp, we'll definitely do that again, and maybe you'll even come back and talk about it. And, I don't know anything about games, so tell me about the game videos, the game shows. Help me, Eric.
That's Sealy Studios was founded by my business partner, former business partner Don Dem, who was very well known in the board game and role playing game world, the analog gaming world, and he passed away about 2 years ago. Wonderful, brilliant guy, and the company was originally called Pulp Gamer Media, specializing in the creation of news and entertainment for the analog gaming world, and so that was kind of how the company was built. One of the things that he and his team spearheaded, and I later was able to be involved with as I became a partner, was the 13-season, nearly 200-episode branded entertainment show, The Bob and Angus Show, for one of the largest board game companies in the world. And so the company kind of came out of branded entertainment and podcasting, and so we're looking at within the next year or so, the relaunch of Pulp Gamer, and being more involved in the analog gaming world as well.
Sounds great.
All right, and so that is for my friends that I want you to know. I do love. I did not part out, and that is Peter DeWalter, James Spring, James Breen, and a lot more. But yes, I wanted to make sure Pulp Gamer Media. And Eric, it's been so good to have you. Everybody that's listened, and James, thanks for joining in with us, James Musgrave. And I just want to say best of luck to everything you do. Eric, you've got to come back.
I will, of course.